is simply this, that if you and I are going to make an exchange, and it is based upon property and so forth, meaning exchanges of property or fulfillment of contracts and so forth, we may want to define and identify between ourselves a mutual agreement as to what your right in the situation is, my right in the situation is, and then with the intention to act upon it. We do this because we realize that we can communicate imprecisely, that we can perceive things imprecisely and so forth, that even though our intentions are good, all kinds of mistakes can happen from not understanding each other correctly. So we define our terms and we say, this is yours and this is mine, and I agree to pass this from me to you, and you're going to pass that from you to me, and it should be within this time and live up to this standard and so forth. This is all that there ever is to rights, but it is by mutual respect and agreement, and it rests upon the voluntary agreement. And if you can't get the voluntary agreement, then the only way you can enforce rights is by power, by force, by coercion. Now, if you've decided not to force somebody else as a means of, if you've decided not to force, I don't even know what I had in mind. Who did this? Let's see. Somebody like to finish this? Well, let's go on from in this way. This points up the nature of rights. It is always on a one-to-one basis, and it rests upon the voluntary agreement. What I was trying to say was something about if you've decided you're not going to force people as a means of protection, meaning warding them off rather than for restitution, then you're relying on their voluntary intentions. And so you must recognize who you're dealing with. If you're not going to enforce the contract by some means of force, then you simply have to recognize in advance who you're dealing with and rest on their voluntary intentions. So you recognize them as they are, but that's the key to it. Recognize them. See what they are. Investigate. Find out what they are before you make yourself vulnerable to them. But the rights are always on a one-to-one basis. There is no such thing as a three-way contract. What appears to be a three-way contract is three separate contracts between three different sets of two individuals, no matter how it's written up. But each one is making an agreement with another individual to do certain things for something in return. And one-to-one arrangements are all that counts, and so that's all the area in which you can ever talk about rights is between any two individuals who agree to respect certain rights between them. When Thomas Jefferson wrote the Declaration of Independence, who was he speaking for? Who was he talking about with regard to a respect for life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness and so forth? Obviously, he couldn't speak for anybody else but himself. What he was really saying, whether I don't know whether this was what he had in mind, I certainly am not claiming to know what his motivations were, but what he was really saying in effect was that I will not take somebody else's life or interfere with their liberty or try to prevent them from pursuing happiness because I think everybody ought to have the right to do so. But it was binding only on him. Others began to agree to it, and they signed their names to it too, and they became bound by it to the extent that they were putting their names to it and saying that they would be willing to do this, abide by this code of conduct too. But nobody else was bound. Nobody else could possibly then be said to be required to act by a certain code of conduct simply because Thomas Jefferson wrote a concept of rights and somebody else said, yes, I agree with your concept of rights and I'll sign my name to your paper too. So each individual has to choose for himself or the rights have no meaning. Once the individual has not voluntarily accepted that this is what the right is, then the whole thing goes out the window again and you're talking about nothing but power again. Have you got the power to protect your life, the power to protect your property? Only when the other individual has voluntarily agreed to respect this right you're talking about does it have any meaning as a right. Once the voluntary agreement by him is gone, it becomes a question of power. Now, in choosing to deal with individuals in this world and agencies and so forth, you come to the question of whether or not to deal with the government. Now, this is typical of what would be a true moral question, meaning a question whereby you are going to apply your yardstick, your code of conduct, even though you can't see consequences specifically in front of you. In the simplest of decisions, I can see right in front of me that if I do this, that will happen and there it is. If I do that, that will happen and there it is. But sometimes I have to make decisions in which I only know what the general consequences are that relate to that kind of a general act, but I don't know specifically how those consequences would take place. I know, for instance, that if I steal, it's going to cause bad consequences to me, and I know in general the kinds of consequences that could be caused that I'm labeling bad. But I don't know, for instance, that at 2 o'clock next Sunday afternoon, the guy I stole from is suddenly going to come up from behind me and hit me over the head with something or anything of the sort. I only know that the general consequences of that kind of an act will be bad, and so I call it a bad act for me, meaning I don't want to engage in it. Same thing with government. you can't always see exactly how this